Nope. All right, so I want to move on to discussion of the electric field. And this is a topic that is a very important element of physics in general. All right, well, action at a distance. When Newton was dealing with gravity, there was actually a sort of argument. Now, Galileo lived before him, but even going back to Galileo before, is that, how does gravity, how do things attract? Okay? And there was no real clear idea of gravity during Galileo's time, but actually Galileo refuted the idea that what makes an apple drop could also explain, for instance, the moon's motion, because it required somehow the moon to know something about the Earth when there's no interaction between them. They're completely separated. So this is called action at a distance, and to him, this was sort of occultism or mysticism. He thought this was a crazy idea. When Newton came around, he basically admitted as much. He couldn't explain it, but he said, okay, this is what it is. It's called action at a distance. Somehow, and I have no idea how, the moon is reacting to the mass of the Earth, and that's controlling its motion. The planets are reacting to the mass of the sun, and that's controlling its motion. Well, this was not, this was an, I mean, people argued about this. What is this, what is this force? You know, it doesn't make sense. In the course of the studies of electricity and magnetism, the idea came up of something called a field, right? Now, a field is a very general concept. A field is basically a list of numbers. Okay? Let's just take an example of a pipe that has water passing through it. Okay, so let's say these arrows represent the motion of individual water molecules inside this pipe. All right? So we have some fluid flow here in some tube. Each one of these has some velocity v sub I. Each one of these molecules at every instant in time has simultaneously a value v sub I. Okay? Every point, another way to look at it is every point in this tube has a local velocity associated with it. All right? So there's a v sub I here, and at the same time, there's a v sub, j over here. It's a different v. It's associated with that position. They have a value at the exact same time. All right? So the list of v sub i's is a field. It could be other things. This we tend to view this idea of field sometimes with an idea of flow in mind, so that's nice to have this tube. But I could also say, well, every region has a density, rho. Okay? At every instant in time, there is a parameter, a rho, a local density, that is associated with every location in this tube. And some places may have a little more density than others or whatever. So there's a field, okay, of these things. All right? Now, there is a definition that we use, which I'll write down, which is that any physical quantity which can be specified simultaneously for all points within a given region of interest. This is the sort of definition. It's a mathematical idea more than anything. You can think about it as a set of points almost, but it's a function. Okay? So at every point, there is some value of this. Okay? Now, all right, why is this useful? Well, it's useful because we want to understand if there is a, we have a charge here and a charge here. If I remove this charge, I just have this charge, okay? We would like to understand what is happening in space around this object in terms of an electrical force. We shouldn't have to worry about what we put to it, near it. We just want to know what kind of an electrical impact does this charge have in its vicinity. And this will allow us to think about that or to begin to think about that. Okay? But it has some implications for this action at a distance. So let's consider a pair of charges, Q1 and Q2. So there's going to be a force between these, F12, okay? And let's not really worry about what the signs are. There's just some force. The question is, what is this force going to be? And more importantly, how do we understand what the impact of this charge is on space, regardless of this? So we define something called the electric field. And it's usually written in capital E, it's a vector. And the definition of this is that in the limit of some test charge, it is the force divided by that test charge. Okay, what does this mean? Well, let's replace Q2 with Q and Q1 with Q0 and replace F12 with just F, okay? So this is now using the terminology we have here. So what this is there is a property. I mean, remember that F equals KQ0 over R squared R hat. So Q0 enters explicitly in our calculation of F. But if I do this calculation, now I'm dividing Q0 out. So Q0 does not enter explicitly into my definition of E. What it's going to end up being is KQ over R squared. And we can have our hat, right? So we'll get to that in a minute. But what we've done is we've sort of normalized out this test charge, this Q0. This Q0 is standing in as saying, okay, if I were to put a charge here, what force would I feel? Another way to say it is, what force per unit charge that I put here would I feel? That's what the electric field is telling you. So maybe it's a little bit tricky to think about, but this is now something that you only need one charge, and it tells you the space in the vicinity of this charge will have this electrical property associated with it. Every point in space near this charge, and my points in space are dictated by R here, okay, will have some electric field that's only a property determined by that charge and how far away from that charge I am, R. Okay? So this is electric field. And you can think about it as force per unit charge of the test charge, Q0. Now, why does this matter? Well, what ends up happening is that we start to, and we have to be a little bit careful here because we will run into the trap that Galileo was worried about. Basically, the question here now is, now I have a charge, Q. And I have some E here, some E here. You know, it's just a function of R. E of a function of R at different points all over here. And obviously, from the way that I've written it for this point charge, the closer I am to this charge, the higher E is. The further away I am, the lower E is. Okay? But now, the question becomes, this E, we start to think of it as a property. It's something in its own right. We don't have action at a distance now. What we have is, okay, let's put a test charge over here. We now have, in this region, an E field, an electric field. Okay? And this electric field is the thing that's allowing this to communicate to this. Okay? And we could argue about what is this electric field. I really can't tell you. In particle physics and quantum mechanics, the way that we think about this is actually an exchange of particles. But we're a far way from that here in this course in classical physics. It was sort of thought about as a property of space. Okay? Once you put a charge here, space attains this property, electric field. Some people will argue that this is a real, essentially concrete property. Other people will argue that this electric field idea is just a mathematical construct. We don't really know what it is. And I can't argue against either one of those conclusively, but what we can say is that doing it this way has direct consequences that matter. Why? Because let's say I move this charge, okay? In the action at a distance situation, Q0 at all times, it's action at a distance. At all times, it knows exactly where this charge is. So if I move this charge to be, let's say I do this, I move it to be 2 times farther away from Q0 than it was in the beginning, okay? What that says is that instantaneously, let's say I do this instantaneously, Q0 knows what happened. Now, if I move the charge Q away, what will happen to the strength of the force that Q0 feels? Will it go up or down? Will it get larger or smaller? It'll go down, right? So if I take Q and move it all of a sudden twice as far away, in the action at a distance idea, I should see the strength of the force go down by a factor of 4, because it's 1 over r squared. That should happen instantaneously, exactly when I do this. In the field case, this has to be communicated to Q0. And this is communicated at some speed, which we now know is the speed of light. Okay, which is a very fast speed, but it's finite. And so when this moves, this doesn't know about it until the waves that, you know, just before I move it, it's here, and then just after I move it, it's here. So this discontinuity in where it is has to be conveyed to Q0. That takes time because there's a velocity involved. That's what we observe. If we move these charges or we do something to one of them, we see a delay in the impact of that on the force felt by, say, the test charge Q0. Yeah. Yes? Oh, sure. Sure.
And so if I have an electron, say, a light year away from us, and it moves, it'll take a year for that.
Yes. Yes. That's right. Yeah. So there's a direct, I mean, I guess you guys didn't get it in mechanics, but we don't just talk about electric fields, we talk about gravitational fields. You've probably heard about this if you've seen or read any science fiction or anything. They throw these words around like crazy. But in any case, that is, we talk about that gravitational field. It's the same idea. So, you know, for instance, the Earth is orbiting the sun. If somehow the sun was just taken away instantaneously, it would take 8 minutes for the Earth to stop orbiting where the sun was, because that's how long it would take the information that there's no gravitational mass there to get to the Earth. So it would still move in a curve, and then it would start to move straight, because there's no gravitational attraction anymore. So these things have been tested, for instance, in this case, and that's what's observed. Okay? So the field idea has a real impact on what we think about, and it's also, I'm becoming chalk man, it also can help you think about what's going on, because it can get confusing. And one way in particular that it can help you think about what's going on is with the concept of electric field lines. And I'm just going to introduce this briefly at the moment, but this is going to become important later. So let's just imagine we have two charges here. Two positive charges, okay? What is the case is that when we have an electric field here, irrespective of the sign of Q0, we know that this electric field has a magnitude and a direction based on the sign and magnitude of Q. So we have a convention here with lines. For positive Q, the lines are outward. Okay, they radiate out. And the magnitude of Q, as it gets larger, the number of lines also gets larger, goes up. Okay? So what I can say is if I've got a charge Q here, this is positive, so I'm going to have lines that are going to radiate out of this thing. Okay? And if Q is larger, I'll have even more lines. Q is really large, I'll have really a huge number of lines. Okay? The same is true here. So I have a positive charge, I have a bunch of radiating lines. Okay? Now, these two charges are both radiating lines. Electric field lines cannot cross. So what ends up happening is we end up with this. I'm screwing up here, but okay. So over here, we just have these radiating lines. Now, the density of lines tells you the strength of the E field. So here, I have a high density of electric field lines. So what's that tell me about the strength of the E field? I have a high electric field. What that actually means is if I was to put a charge there, I would have a strong force, either attracting or repelling. Here, the lines are much more spread out. I'm further away. They've fanned out further. So what is the strength of the electric field going to be, large or small? Small. Okay? So this kind of just graphically shows it to you. All right? And I also could see here that if I'm right here, anywhere in this plane between these two charges, I'm getting pushed this way as much as I'm getting pushed that way. Things are going to cancel. So it kind of graphically shows you a little bit about what the electric field, and in particular the electric force, would be in different places in this distribution, in this plot. I'll leave it there. Now, okay. So now the next thing we want to do is, as we did with the electric forces, we want to talk about point charges. So let's consider again, a Q1 and a Q2. The force between them, F12, is K Q1 Q2 over R12 squared, R12 hat. All right? Now, that means that the electric field, E1, let's consider it that way, is going to be K Q1 over R hat. We just divided by, let's consider Q2 our test charge. We want to do what the electric field is from Q1. Okay? And R represents, now really this guy goes away, R just represents the vector to wherever we decide to evaluate the electric field. Remember, the electric field, it's a parameter simultaneously defined for all points in space. What's the electric field here, 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 here? I can ask this question. R is the distance vector from the charge Q1 that I'm evaluating to that point. And for multiple charges, E tot. So let's say now we have, let's put Q2 back in here. Q3, Q4. Okay, so I've got a whole bunch of charges over here. Now I want to know what the electric field from all of those is at this point way out here. Okay? So that's going to be E1 plus E2 plus E3. Plus E4, blah, 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 whatever charges there are. Okay? So it just equals the sum over I of all charges I. Okay? Now, this is vector sum, which is very important to keep in mind. Let's consider an electric dipole. All right. Say it again.
Is the R in the denominator of E1?
Oh, here? I suppose, but you don't need that anymore because, you could. You could have it be the R from where we are to Q1. That would probably, yes, because in the sense that when you go to put this, there's going to be an R in each of these, and it's going to be the R to those different charges. So yeah, that's true. That would be better. It is squared. Oh, but I didn't copy it. Yep. Okay, thanks. Okay, so now we want to consider a very special case which comes up often, which is called an electric dipole. So let's consider we have two charges, a plus Q and we have a minus Q. And these are a distance of 2a from each other. And I want to know what the electric field is from them at some point P along the x-axis, which is the axis that bisects them. I want to know what the E field is at this point P as a result of these two charges. Okay? I really would appreciate keeping your phones turned off. Thanks. Okay, so first of all, we have some angle here. Theta. It's going to be the same for Q and minus Q. This is symmetric around the x-axis here. And so we need to calculate things. Now, there's going to be an electric field from this charge and an electric field from this charge. The electric field from E, this charge here, okay, we could call this Q1, this Q2, but they have the same magnitude. This charge produces an E field that's to the bottom right, okay, because the E field radiates away from a positive charge. So all of the electric field lines are pointing away. Q2 is a minus Q. It has it produces an electric field E2, which is back to the bottom left towards Q2, because it's attractive and electric field lines come into negative charges. Okay? Now, the thing about this, I'm going to want to know what E is. Now, if my coordinate system is X and Y, what can I say about the X component of E? It's zero, because this has the same magnitude as this, and they cancel. They're opposing each other in the X direction. Okay? So EX equals zero. EY is going to be equal to 2 times E2Y, which equals 2 times E1Y. Okay? They're in the same direction, so they add. And E2Y or E1Y, these could be evaluated in the following way. This is going to be 2 times the charge, okay, the charge A squared plus R squared, okay? So this here is just, this is just E times 1Y, for instance. But there's an extra term here. This piece is E1, and this piece is E1y. Okay? Do you guys follow that? Just ask. It's okay. There's no bad questions. Okay? Sometimes I miswrite stuff too. So, you know, ask questions. As you've already seen, I've screwed up a couple things. So, so E2 has a Y component and an X component. And we just agreed that we don't care about the X component because it goes away in the final number. But this Y component is going to go into E. E1 also has a Y component. That's going to be the same size, and it's going to add. So the two of these, they both have the same Y component, so they add up. So EY is just 2 times one of them. Okay? Okay, so now I can rewrite cosine theta as A over A squared R squared, square root of A squared over R squared. Bah. A over the square root of A squared plus R squared. Okay? And now I can multiply all this out. I can get rid of the E sub Y because there is no other component here. So E, if I now substitute in all of these pieces, I end up with 2KAQ over A squared plus R squared to the 3/2. Okay, and that's substitution. That's taking this piece and then substituting in this piece. So I have everything in terms of numbers I know. A, R, Q, yeah. R is the distance between them. Okay, so in the problem, I know A, and then I have some distance x out to this point, so I can put it in this way. Okay? Now, if A, an important aspect here of this, and is that if A is much less than R, okay, so these distances here are tiny compared to, you know, I'm way out here, so these things look like they're almost exactly on top of each other, then what that means is that I don't care about R squared in here anymore, because it's essentially zero, so I end up with the following, 2kAq over R to the third. And actually, hold on a second. Make sure that I have that right. Yeah, sorry, I did that right. So if A is much smaller than R, A, we don't have to worry about A squared down here. We still have to worry about it up here because it's multiplicative. So this goes away, and it's just A over the R squared to the 3 halves, which is R cubed. Okay? Now, the important thing to note about this is that for a point charge, the electric field is 1 over R squared. But for a dipole, it's 1 over R cubed. And the reason for this is that these charges are negative, but positive and negative. So if I'm far enough away, they just cancel out. Okay? They're very close to each other. And so, you know, from a distance way far away here, they're so close to each other that I'm basically the same distance to each one of them. I feel the same E field, and they cancel because one is negative and one is positive. All right? So what that means is the further away I go, the faster the strength of the electric field falls compared to a point charge, because as you go further away, they start to cancel. And the other thing about this, which we will actually resurrect, this 2aq is called the electric dipole moment. And this is a property because, for instance, in an atom, you have this situation, a positively charged nucleus, and then you have a negatively charged electron. More importantly, I mean, the electron is distributed evenly, but in a molecule, you often have molecules that are asymmetric. Part of the molecule has a net negative charge, part of the molecule has a net positive charge, like a water molecule. And so they act as a dipole. They're asymmetric. The net charge of that molecule is zero, but it's distributed in such a way that it acts like a dipole. And but a lot of times you can't measure the separation between the atoms and the molecule, but what you can measure is this thing called the electric dipole moment, 2aq. So this is sort of a fundamental property of a dipole. Okay. If A is much less than R, so I'm far, far away, right? R is huge. These things are really close together, okay? Then, essentially, they're so close together, I'm the same distance to this charge as to this charge, they cancel, because there's one negative and one positive. So I feel, you know, very, very small electric field and force. Okay?